Hoopball Podcast listeners, are you a fantasy expert and want to write or podcast for Hoopball? Do you have aspirations of covering a team? Are you a master of sales and want to earn some cash on the phones? Well, we've got good news. Hoopball's recruiting. If you think you have what it takes, hit us up at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or by emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com. Again, that's at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com.
The following is a Hoopball presentation.
Ballers! Welcome back to another episode of Today in Sports Betting. This is a special Monday evening presentation of Today in Sports Betting, and we have a fantastic guest on the show today. Before we introduce him and get started, just want to give a shout out to our sponsors over at manscaped.com. They have new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, and you always hear me talk about it. Their water-resistant technology is fantastic. Go pick one up. Go to manscaped.com. Type in the promo code HOOPBALL20. That's HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. Get 20% off and free shipping. Guys, we have another great guest on the show today. He hails from, this is how I know of him. He comes from the network VSiN, Vegas Stats and Information Network. Jonathan Von Tobel, how are you, buddy? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing good, man. Thank you very much. You know, it's Monday, so we had football today, and you know, the NFL's back in action. We have all these playoffs, NHL basketball, baseball still going on. So it's doing pretty well, right, in the world of sports.
Yeah, I know we got football on right now as we're recording. Second half just kicked off, tie game between the Raiders and the Saints. You know, you see me wearing my Circa Millions 2 hat, so yeah. I got the Raiders tonight. So hopefully they can cover, and I can improve my record here in the contest.
What was the number for the contest?
I'm both in the Westgate Super Contest and the Circa. I believe it was 5.5. I want to say.
Wow, that's a good number. I mean, that came crashing down today, man. Some play got to, you know, sure Westgate did. Went to 3.5. It was insane watching that number go down.
Sure did. I hit it at 5.5. I hit it at 5, and I put some more money down before the game at +4. It didn't look so good to start the game, but. The Raiders are driving the ball. Hopefully, take the lead here. So that'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, they offensively, you're right, because I thought they missed Ruggs on a big play downfield. Derek Carr didn't really look too well. Took a couple of bad sacks, but that turnover by Breeze was awful. Got you guys right back in it.
Horrible! What a horrible turnover that was at the end of the second half there. But listen, I'll take what I can get. Right, when you're betting. Yep. Sometimes the bad plays go against you, and you remember the bad beats more than you remember the things that help you out. So hopefully I'll remember this one.
Yep. Oh, you will. That'll live for you, especially if it helps you out in the contest.
Yeah, exactly. All right, John. So I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts. I had some questions for you before maybe we jump into some, you know, some series prices and some lines for tomorrow for the NBA. If y'all don't know who John is, he is great with the NBA. That's how I got introduced to him. Used to listen to him a ton when I was a single guy and just kind of driving back and forth from playing poker and going to work and just had a lot of time to listen to him. He's fantastic. So if you don't follow him, you definitely got to check him out. So, John, I know you've had a lot of great success with the NBA. You know, what was it that kind of got your start with the NBA? Did it have a direct correlation to sports betting? Were you a sports bettor first and then an NBA specialist later? Or did you grow up with the sport? Did you grow up playing ball and then you kind of saw the game and you're an analytics guy and you just kind of started sports betting?
So it kind of all came at once. I mean, I've always been like a basketball fan, right? Like growing up, you know, watching the league, and especially in my like later formative years, right? Like teenage years, you really get into it a little bit more. And as you get older, so like I've always enjoyed the sport of basketball, and I've always enjoyed betting, you know, always throwing in parlay cards when you were a little bit younger over at the Red Rock and, you know, getting there, sitting there thinking like, oh man, my five teamer would have hit if that one team. So it kind of came together. But as far as like kind of really diving headfirst into being like NBA as the specialty, you know, I kind of just saw Mark didn't really have a lot. You know, you talk to people about the NBA, and I think the first thing when it comes to the NBA and betting, when you talk to certain people, it's that's impossible. The regular season's impossible. You can't bet NBA on a night-to-night basis. And that was kind of the motivation for me because I really enjoyed the sport. You know, I watched it in the regular season a little bit more than the average person. And so I thought, you know, this is a pretty good idea now that I'm with VSiN to carve this kind of niche out here and to start giving this league the coverage that I think, one, it deserves, and two, you know, to show that if you dive in enough, if you pay attention enough, you can have success in the regular season. It's not just a postseason betting sport. And hopefully, you know, the coverage has come across like that as well in the time that I've been doing it for the last few years. So that's really what led to me doing it is I just felt that it was a market that was kind of untapped, and I think that's a little rare, right? In today's world, where almost everything, like no matter what it is, from video games to sports to cooking, whatever, it's hard to find a niche that you feel is relatively untapped. And I thought like NBA betting, especially in the regular season, was one of those. And that's why I kind of went into it full bore.
That's amazing. And, you know, I had Gil Alexander on the show, another cohort of yours over at VSiN. And we talked at length about NBA betting and how it really is almost impossible to predict the outcomes. The line seems so tight most of the time. And, you know, it's such a game of runs. You know, I've made a lot of my money sports betting the NBA in game. You know, I grew up playing basketball, X's and O's guy, and I'm also, you know, financial savvy. You know, I before I got into doing this podcast, I was and still work in the financial services industry. So big on the numbers and things like that. But I also feel like when you watch a game, you can kind of see the types of, you know, the different types of shot attempts that players are taking, teams are taking, the types of defenses that are out there, you know, on a night-to-night basis. What are your overall thoughts between, you know, between pre-flop betting the NBA and in-game wagering? Do you think that there's a big edge in in-game wagering that really, I don't think a lot of people take advantage of still in 2020?
Yeah, I would say when it comes to in-game wagering, 100%. And the market's growing, as we know, when you talk to bookmakers and how much more popular it's becoming. But especially in just the game of basketball itself, right? Both in college, there's not as many runs in the NBA, but the NBA seems to be a sport that is set up perfectly for in-game wagering because these lines move, you know, for a bucket by bucket. It's incredible to watch, and these algorithms will move it for every single basket that is scored. And I've always found that interesting from that perspective, that, you know, you allow these algorithms to move as much as they do, considering what we know about the NBA as a sport when it comes to in-game. So I would totally agree with that. And, you know, to tie in the pre-flop stuff, I do bet a lot of NBA games pre-flop, but there's also a lot of great opportunities, you know, betting pre-flop and then going in-game while you're watching them. You know, one of the best examples, it was actually during the NBA bubble, but there was a Pelicans game, for example, and the Spurs were catching 3.5 points in that game. And according to my numbers, I actually thought the Spurs should have been favored. So I took 3.5 with the Spurs. They actually built up a 20-point lead over the Pelicans. And then you go in game and you take a 13.5 with the New Orleans Pelicans. And then all of a sudden you're set up with a +3.5 on one side, the +13.5 on the other side. The game falls on 10 and you're set up very well. So I think especially when it comes to pre-flop, like a lot of the times you don't want to necessarily solely involve yourself pre-flop. I do probably a little bit more than I should, but I do have a lot of faith in my numbers and it's worked out a lot. But using it as a tool to then go forward in the game and then have that barometer where you can set yourself up with nice middles where you can hit both ends, it's extremely important. But I would agree with you wholeheartedly, and that's why I go back to the whole thing, like the NBA is impossible. If you have the opportunity to sit down and watch a nightly, you know, game on a night-to-night basis, it's not, because you can set yourself up whether it's side or total with a lot of these in-game lines.
Yeah, I mean, I got the computer going, I got the iPad going, I got the TV going, I got 4 or 5 games on. I don't even know what's going on, but I'm trying to pay attention as much as I can so I can see if there's an opportunity. And it comes back to your point, like, it's 2020. How are these algorithms not adjusting for the fact that the NBA is a game of runs? Like, especially with the Lakers-Rockets series recently, I made so much money betting the Rockets at like +18, +17, you know, and then taking the other side, if the Lakers were down, I would take the Lakers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. You have to have conviction before the game for sure. Like, I will look at the card prior to tip off and I will say, okay, out of the 7 games tonight, I like these 3 matchups and I like these 3 sides and I like this one total. And if I can find a better number in game, I mean, I'm just going to hammer it. So I don't understand what they're doing exactly with the algorithms, but I feel like they're going to adjust. But right now I feel like it's ripe for the taking still. And I'm just going to keep betting it.
Yeah, 100%. And look, like games, you know, like football, for example, you know, obviously the game is not as extreme in terms of the swings and the scoring. So you're not going to see that with the line. But with college, with basketball in general, I shouldn't say college basketball, with basketball, like that game is, like you mentioned, it's a cliche. It is a game of runs. And so to know that going into it and yet to still see, like you said, like an algorithm where, you know, a 6.5 point favorite will open up like a 6.7 point lead or something like that. And it'll bump it up to like, you know, 8.5, something like that. That's a small example, but it's still, it's amazing to me where I'm like, well, this team's favored by 6.5. Like they're up by 6. Like, yeah, of course, like, you know what I mean? Should you be bumping it up this much? And certain things like that, like you see it all the time. And there's certain books like the South Point, for example, I know they do their in-game wagering themselves as opposed to, you know, dealing with an algorithm, and maybe they have a little bit better feel for it, but I know that they don't offer in-game wagering as much on NBA stuff as they do like more on like primetime games or, you know, big postseason games, NBA finals. So that's the trade-off there, but I would agree with you. You know, I'm really curious to see as the years go forward if these algorithms do adjust to what the NBA is, or it just continues to be, you know, out there and they think that, you know, it's a small market, it's a niche market, and we're not going to lose that much because the only really smart guys are paying attention to this sort of stuff, and we won't get killed too much on this because it's not something that the general public has really caught up to yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I feel like, yeah, the general public's definitely not in-game wagering. I mean, they're not even, you know, they're just placing their bet and they're, you know, going out to dinner with their wife and coming home, and it's like, you know, fourth quarter, oh, I'll turn the game on, I got $200 on it, right?
Right. So, I mean, tonight's a good example too, by the way, right? The Monday night game, the Raiders, like, you know, people were coming into town. They just wanted to check out Las Vegas and check out the outside of the stadium. They were betting the Raiders today at, you know, 4.5, 4, 3.5. Like, they don't really care, right? They don't care about numbers. They just want to bet on their side. So I think that speaks to the general public. And the public's getting smarter in general, but, you know, that's just where it is right now. They just want to bet on their team, and they want to sit back and see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, the number in Vegas must be a lot lower offshore than offshore regarding the Las Vegas Raiders tonight. I mean, I don't know what the closing line was in Vegas at all, but I can't imagine it was the same as, you know, far in faraway places, like even legal sports books like DK and FanDuel, right? I don't, there's no way that that number could have been the same, you know? Yeah, I mean, I know. Sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was going to say, I saw the Westgate close at 3.5 or got to 3.5. I'm not sure if they closed 3.5, but that was like 20 minutes before kickoff. And then there was fours across the board pretty much everywhere else in Nevada, I should say.
Right, right. I mean, I know Musburger is very, you know, very sharp, and he's all about the Raiders this year. So, you know, if you have conviction on a team, it's like if you have a conviction on a team and you think that the number is going to get deflated or inflated one way, you need to wait, right?
Yep.
I mean, we saw that, we see it all the time. Let me ask you a side question regarding your NBA analysis. Are you more of a sides guy or a totals guy?
I'm more of a sides guy. You know, it's funny because I really, really like numbers. A lot. Like, you know, I love the analytical aspect of the NBA. I love that you can track so much about it. But as far as my handicapping goes, you know, to be quite frank, I do struggle with totals. Like, it's something that I just don't really have a very good feel for. And sometimes you can't just keep beating a dead horse, right? Especially when you're that dead horse.
Yep.
Because I just lose money when it comes to totals. So, you know, I have things on the side where I'll keep track of totals I would like and where I would play them and what I'm looking for. But the returns just haven't been there for me, even just not betting them, just tracking what I would be doing, right, if I was betting them. So for right now, I'm really exclusively a sides player as it stands.
Gotcha. I hear you. I mean, I have my own little NBA model. I wouldn't say it's probably the best in the world, but at least It gives me the numbers aspect. And I watch pretty much almost every game. And if not, I'll try to watch highlights on YouTube. So that kind of leads me in the right direction where – I can kind of see both teams and then I can make a decision based on my number. So I totally agree with you. I'm a numbers guy as well. I have a question in regards to VSiN. So how did you get started with the company, and did you just come straight in guns blazing host, or, you know, I'm a little unfamiliar with your story. So maybe you can, you know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners on the podcast aren't too familiar with you or VSiN, you know, as we get more guests on. So I'd love to hear your story regarding how you got started in the industry and how you got started with VSiN in particular.
So I went to school for media journalism studies out here at the College of Southern Nevada. And my first job in media was with ESPN 1100, the local ESPN affiliate in Las Vegas. And there, my first job as an actual full-fledged producer was with Matt Eumanns on the Las Vegas Sportsline.
It was love Matt player. Eumanns. Big fan of Matt Eumanns.
So I've known Eumanns for a while. You know, he was essentially the first host that I produced it for. And so I've built my relationship with Eumanns. We've known each other for a very long time, at least, you know, in my scope, for like a very long time, right? For the last, I'd say, 7 to 8 years or so. And so that's how I started it in media. And Humans eventually got signed on and moved on to the Vegas Stats and Information Network. And they needed producers. They needed on-air producers. They needed people who could do updates and work behind the scenes. And so Humans, of course, moving on, knowing me, put me in front of Brian Musburger. And, you know, they took me on and signed me on. And I was Brent Musburger's producer on my first job over at VEASAN. So I was Brent's producer for My Guys in the Desert.
My Guys in the Desert, yep.
Yeah, so I was their first on-air producer. And I really helped a lot behind the scenes, you know, to like in terms of like production and getting us off the ground and formulating shows and things like that. So that's how I started with VEASAN. I was really a lot of behind the scenes and helping them get off the ground from a production standpoint. And then once we got off the ground and programming started to expand and personnel started to change, there was an opening, and my show was actually just a fill-in. It was kind of an emergency fill-in spot, and they needed me to hop on. It was during March Madness, and you know, I covered UNLV basketball in my time at ESPN 1100, and I knew college hoops very well. And so I had hopped on in that regard, and I guess I did enough. And from there on, you know, I was a host. And at first I was hosting with Humans, and then eventually when everything happened with COVID and changing things up with our lineup, it eventually led to giving me my own show over on The Edge. So it was kind of a weird cliched path, though, you know. Like, start as a producer, work your way up, board op, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, now here we are.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still aiming to be Gil's number 10 producer at some point in the future. So hopefully he'll find a spot for me when it gets to double digits. I just want to circle back with the NBA. You know, what makes the NBA I know you said it was a niche market where everyone said it was impossible to bet on, and you kind of just, we're like, no, I got this. I want to conquer this market, right? But is it your favorite sport to bet on also, like in terms of watching the sport, and or, you know, do you lean to another sport like the NFL or, you know, hockey or MLB or anything like that?
So I grew up, I think, as most American kids do, like as a real big football fan, you know what I mean? Like, loved the National Football League, you know. Like when I was like 6 and Kurt Warner and the Rams were playing, I remember my dad would like making like Super Bowl cookie, like sugar cookies and all that stuff, because I was so excited to sit down and watch the Rams play. I was a big Kurt Warner fan. When I grew up and all the way through, primarily it was like football. Really enjoyed football. And then the NBA love started to come around, and then baseball started to come around. But as far as like right now, where I'm at with my really like my loyalties, I really enjoy the NBA. Like, I would put the NBA ahead of football right now. And I would really love for it to be my full-time job, at least in terms of covering the NBA for VSIN, you know, being on The Edge and having all this stuff going on. You can't just have a 2-hour centric NBA show. And, right, you know, obviously it is kind of a niche market, so you can't focus entirely on it. But if we're rating it by like which one I like to bet most, which one I like to view the most, you know, I love to bet on football, but if I'm picking just one of them, you know, I really do enjoy the NBA. I think they have the best athletes in the world. I think the game is fun. You know, a lot of these games, they can be very enjoyable in terms of higher scoring, since people like that kind of stuff. And I think it's just a visually a pleasing game as well. And, you know, there's some edges to be had in it as well. That's also helped. So I think overall, like right now, as I've gotten older and more mature, like 6 years ago, I'd probably rank the NFL just ahead of the NBA. But right now, like over the last, I'd say 3-4 years, it has definitely taken center stage, because I really do enjoy the sport.
Interesting. So speaking of the NFL, what were your biggest takeaways from week 2, or even week 1, if you, or just in general, of the COVID situation, the bubble, no fans in the stands, offenses scoring at such a high pace and such a high rate? What are your biggest takeaways here so far in the NFL season?
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options in stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I think right now, I think to focus on the offenses first, like I think you're starting, you're seeing that some of these offenses, for the most part, that had some returning personnel and some continuity, whether it was coordinator or head coach, you know, they're kind of finding a relatively, I don't call it seamless, but they're kind of still churning along, right? The Baltimore Ravens being the greatest example of that. So far through the first 2 weeks have looked pretty smooth offensively. They have really not lost a step whatsoever. Even in their first, and even in both of those games too, they didn't have like perfect games, right? The first game, their running attack wasn't that great, under 4 yards per carry. The second game, the passing attack wasn't quite there for them, but they ran the ball extremely well. So it's not without its hiccups, but I think you're seeing with some of these teams that if you had some returning personnel, if you had some guys, right, that were there already in terms of the staff, it was kind of a seamless transition. The other part of it, though, is certain aspects like the Browns, right, who are breaking in a new staff. The first game was not very comfortable for them, but then the second game, another practice, you know, the practices under the belt, an actual game under the belt, you look a little bit better, and you're breaking in a whole new coaching staff with a new coordinator. And I think that's kind of my first takeaway, is it seems like some of these teams that had some continuity and some just calmness with their roster and move forward. And I would say it's the same with defenses, too. Look at it, like the Minnesota Vikings, you know, they lost a lot of personnel defensively over in the offseason, whether it was through free agency, you know, key guys that they signed to the offseason opted out. But that's really tough to turn that around in an offseason where you didn't get a lot of practice together, especially on the field when it came to the preseason. And through two games, it has really showed the offseason, I think, hurt, and all the offseason losses hurt the Minnesota Vikings. So I think really, if you had like kind of a steady hand in terms of guiding the team, it seems like those teams have kind of gotten off to a better start through the first 2 weeks than we have seen some of these teams with these roster turnarounds or head coaching turnarounds.
It's a really good point. I didn't really think about it like that, but you make a really good point. A lot of these teams that have their core that have stuck together have looked really good. Even as example with the offense and the Saints, they look really good. They still look good, even though Drew Brees doesn't quite look, you know, the same. Mm-hmm. They're still under, you know, the same coaching staff, the same core. Latavius Murray, Kamara, Breeze, Thomas, even though he's out tonight, Traquan Smith. Even with the Raiders, you see their offense is just plugging along. I mean, they got the same guys, Carr and Jacobs, that, you know, Darren Waller. They got the core guys who, you know, been there together. And that's a really, really good point. So thank you for that. Mike Palm said on Friday his biggest takeaway from week one was how bad the refereeing was. That was his, and you know Mike Palm, he's very big into that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, there was some pretty bad moments for the most part overall. None of it really stick out to me, like, initially in terms of the officiating, but I would say, like, officiating overall just needs to improve. Some of these guys, like, it's funny with the NFL, they seem to, and this is just like a partial observation, I don't have any stats behind this, they seem to have the collection of the oldest officials in all of the major sports. I think the NBA is kind of up there as well, but when it comes to the NFL, and I know that there's one guy who actually started this year, his first year as an NFL referee, but the referees seem to be on the older side in the National Football League more often than not than all the other sports.
Interesting. Yeah, they got to get better eyes, because the officiating, yeah. I mean, the officiating has been horrendous, but I could say the same thing about basketball too, but I just think that the officiating needs to get better all around. Anyways, let's move on to NBA. We got the guru himself on the show, right? So we got to ask you, what do you think about these series? First of all, Anthony Davis hitting the game-winning shot last night. Fantastic. Unbelievable. I'm from Los Angeles. I mean, I currently live in Miami, but I'm from Los Angeles. Grew up a big Kobe fan, obviously. I'm not too – I don't really have a team I root for. I've just never been that guy. I've really just been always focused on sports betting and fantasy ever, even as far back as I can remember in high school. You know, so I've never really had a team, but, you know, just seeing that shot last night reminded me of kind of the Shaq and Kobe years, and it was a lot of fun. So any takeaways from the let's start with the Denver Lakers series. It's 2-0 now. Any thoughts here on this series, and do you think the Nuggets even have a chance to make a comeback here?
So I would say from like an overall series perspective, if we're asking like if the Nuggets have a shot of coming back and winning the series, I would probably say no, right? Like I felt like the Nuggets were going to lose this series in about six games, and I would kind of stick to it right now. Although I did think that they had a really good shot, obviously, at winning in game two, and I thought there was going to be the opportunity to steal one. But I think overall, if we're looking at it, you know, it's interesting. We were talking about this on our show before the series started, but just the number itself, right, in terms of these games. And if you go back to the regular season, the Los Angeles Lakers against the Nuggets in the regular season, they were 3-1. They'd won 3 out of 4. They were good against them from a straight up result. However, against the spread, they were only 2-2. And then you get into the actual results themselves. And, you know, the one loss by the Lakers was a double digit loss to the Nuggets. They also had a double digit win over the Nuggets. And then the other two were by single score deficits, right? In the bubble, it was a 3-point game. And in the regular season, it was an overtime contest, which I believe ended as a 3 or 4 point game as well. And these have been just some tightly played games. And even more fascinating was the fact that in those four games, despite the fact that the Lakers were 3-1 against the Nuggets, they actually had a negative net rating of 3.2. So even if you go to it from like that perspective, the Nuggets, if you put it over 100 possessions, were outscoring them by 3.2 points every 100 possessions, despite the fact that they were 1-3 against them. So to me, it just told me like this is going to be a tightly contested series just on a game-to-game basis. And then you even look at the point spreads throughout the regular season, right? The first game, the Nuggets were a 2.5-point favorite. The next game, it was a Lakers 2.5. The game after that, it was a 3-point spread. And then you got to the bubble, and it popped up to a 5.5-point spread. But again, the Nuggets covering that matchup because they only lost by 3. And what I found interesting was then you get to game one, and game one, 7.5. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. I feel like that's kind of high given what we have seen between these two teams, even as recently as in Orlando in the bubble. And so I bet game one, Nuggets plus 7.5. Ultimately, they lose and don't cover. However, they were really good in the first half. And I think I undervalued the coming back from a 3-1 deficit for a second consecutive series.
Yeah, crazy.
Right, yeah. Like, that was nuts. And so I think I undervalued that because my thinking going into game one was, well, in the first series, when they came back from 3-1 against Utah, they only had one day off, and then they had to go play game one, and they got blown out by the Clippers and didn't cover. This time, they had 2 days off. Well, that didn't really work out, right? They came out in the first half. They were pretty strong, but then they ultimately faded out. But I was kind of stubborn, so I came back in game two, and I was like, I'm going to take 7.5 again. Like, I think this number's too high. We have seen before, again, going back to all those point spreads I mentioned, I'm still going to be stubborn here, and I'm going to take 7.5. Lo and behold, right, they lose at the buzzer. They cover 7.5. Now we're seeing 6.5s for this next game. And I think I'm going to be stubborn again here and take 6.5. Until this gets to about 5.5 pre-flop, I think that's where this number probably should be. You know, because I always ask myself, the question I always ask myself when I look at numbers and if they're different is what changed, right? And what changed? And in game one, clearly there was a change, right? They were coming off of a massive emotional win, a big comeback series victory. Like, that's a big change. And then you go to game two, and I'm like, well, there's still no change here. Like, I still think this is the same teams. And so now we're starting to see this number come back closer to where I think it should be. So I think that's my main observation here is I feel a little emboldened by the fact that in game two, that was more of the series I envisioned. You know what I mean? A tough series, a Nuggets team that matched up relatively well with the Los Angeles Lakers, and that it would fight them tooth and nail almost every single night. And they might lose in 5 or 6 games, but those 5 or 6 games, really a lot of hell for the Los Angeles Lakers. And through two games, right? The first game they lost, but it was a very tight first half. And then in the second game, ultimately losing at the buzzer. So I feel a little emboldened, you know, by game two, and at least my observations going into the series.
Yeah, I think the Nuggets match up really well against the Lakers. Completely agree. So I think that you're right on the money. Like, until this number comes down, and it has come down, like you said, it's at 6.5 now for game three. But yeah, until it comes down, I might be betting the Nuggets as well and might be looking for a live line if the Lakers can pull out to a 21-12 lead early in the first quarter, something like that. Maybe come back with the Nuggets at plus 10.5. You know, can't hurt to take the Nuggets at double digits. You know, they have so many playmakers, and, you know, if Porter Jr. can get going and Gary Harris can ever, you know, have a solid game, which he did. But, you know, it seems like he's finally starting to get going. I think it's a good spot for the Nuggets. Moving on, we got another great series. I bet this pre-flop, and I'm a little nervous right now. I bet the Boston Celtics to win the series pre-flop, minus 125. I just thought with their perimeter defense and I think they're a little bit more athletic. I think they're better, you know, not necessarily shooting the ball, but maybe creating their own shots rather than these, you know, three-pointers by Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, etc. I bet the Celtics, and now I find myself down 2-0 and nervous, and they finally pull out a victory over the weekend. What are your thoughts for game number 4, and what are your thoughts moving forward in this series?
So for the series, I'm invested in Miami. I bet them in December to win the title at 80-1. So I'm really pulling for Miami in this spot to kind of pull this series out. And when you look at it from a matchup perspective, I would completely agree with you. Like Miami, I think if we're differentiating between the two, I think Miami is the better ball movement team, right? And that's how they create their open looks, as opposed to Boston, who I think has 2, 3, 4 guys who can create their own looks. And that's how you kind of change up offensively. And I think that's what you saw in the first two games, was that Boston, at times, their offense would get a little stagnant for multiple reasons. One is sometimes when they're looking for shots, they tend to get a little ISO heavy, right? It's give it to Tatum, give it to Brown, give it to Kemba, and let them work a little bit and maybe set a screen here or there. But for the most part, we'll let them work by themselves. And that's worked from time to time. But what Miami did was, okay, well, then we're going to throw out a 3-2 zone and we're going to see if you can beat that. And that really bothered Boston. It bothered them in the series. Right. And like, if you looked at some of the numbers too, and I haven't seen them updated after the last game since Hayward's come back as well. But in the series, right, with Toronto, they only averaged 0.77 points per possession against the zone in the whole 7-game series. In the first two games against Miami, they were only averaging 0.85 points per possession against the zone. So, like, it was just really, really bothering them from that standpoint. And so that's how Miami counteracted that. And that was a big reason why they went up 2-0 in the series. But to me, again, going back to the question I always ask, you know, what changed? You know, Gordon Hayward comes back. And I don't think it's really a difference here that, like, you see this change for the Boston Celtics, and then all of a sudden they have their highest assist total of the series, right, the last time we see them. And so, like, this is going to be a difference for them going forward, is can the ball movement get a little bit better? Can you actually start to move it around and get multiple touches on a possession to get open looks for some of your guys? And can you start to beat this zone a little bit more than you have? And I think that's, like, the really intriguing piece about this is, you know, as – through two games right now, the Boston Celtics have seen this zone for 10 games now, Toronto and then Miami. And Miami, by the way, ran zone more than any other NBA team in the regular season. So they're really good at playing it. But at some point, as a team in a 7-game series, if you're facing the same defense in the same zone over and over again, at some point you're going to be able to figure that out. And I worry if have they figured that out after game three, right? As somebody who's invested in Miami, has Boston figured that out after game three here and is now set in a good position where they're getting healthier and they understand the defense that they're facing and that they had their struggles against? Well, now we've seen it for 10 consecutive games and we can understand what we do from it, what do against it from an offensive standpoint.
Well, if you look at the game, the third game, I think it was Friday night, right? If you watch that game,
time melts together.
Yeah, right. Every day seems like it's the same because there's sports all day long and four different sports going on. But, you know, if you watch that game, Miami went to the zone, I believe it was in the second quarter, and they made a nice little comeback, and then they went away from the zone, and then kind of Boston pulled away. I don't understand what Spoelstra's thinking there. Why move away from the zone when it really helped propel your offense and your defense? Like, did you understand why he moved away from that?
I really don't, you know, because they, like you said, like these Heat teams have had like these big explosive quarters, right? Especially against Boston. And a big reason why has been those have been quarters where they heavily rely on that zone. And I don't know, because if you look at some of the minutes, like when they're in man-to-man defense, they are getting beat up pretty bad. Like going back to what we were talking about, right? Individual talent, the individual shot creation is so much better for Boston. And that's why the zone helps so much. I was really curious as to why they moved away from it. And I would assume that maybe that means that we're going to see more of them in the next game. But I do wonder too, if maybe Spoelstra started to see that, all right, maybe they are starting to figure this out. Let's switch this up. Let's go back to man. And I think the key difference, I think Spoelstra is an amazing coach. He is fantastic.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Yeah, I agree.
But the difference, I think, between him and Nick Nurse, what he would do defensively, especially with some of his own, it wasn't just the same 3-2 zone he would roll out there, man. You're throwing out a 3-2, you're throwing out a 1-2-2, right, a 2-3. Like, he would switch up the zone defense. He's so good with that. And we've kind of seen the same basic zone defense from the Miami Heat, and I wonder if that's part of that, right? If he's just like, I don't want to roll this out there too much. But I would say, Spo, like, the numbers show you, like, they still haven't entirely figured this out yet, and you've gotten back into these games doing it. I would suspect that he learned the lesson, and we're going to see a lot more of that when it comes to what is going to be on Wednesday, right? Yeah, Wednesday.
Yeah. I don't think that Boston has figured out the zone, by the way. Yeah. I really don't. Going back to our point is that these guys want to play ISO ball, Boston. They create their own shots, and this zone is giving them a lot of problems because you can see it. Jaylen Brown goes to the corner. Tatum goes to the corner. All right, give Kemba the ball. Let him have it. You know, let him have this possession. Dribble, yep. Drive, nothing there, right? And turnover. I think that it is going to continue to give them problems, and if Spoelstra can actually play this zone for the majority of the game, I think Miami will probably win on Tuesday. But the reason I bet Boston prior to the series was because I just thought it was a good number on a series price for Boston, considering all the things that we talked about. I didn't make this number 125. I made it Boston -150, -155. So I just thought from a value standpoint, I was almost forced to bet it, even though all year long I've been saying Boston's just not that great of a basketball team. Like, they have a lot of playmakers, but this bias and all these, the general public saying that Boston's so good, Boston, they're not so good. I just saw value in the number, and that's kind of why I bet it. And I'm hoping that they pull through, but hope, you know, obviously if they don't, you got 80-1, so it'd be good opportunity to hedge, especially if Denver. I think you have a ticket on Denver, right?
I have them at 12-1 to win the Western Conference, so that's not really going to do too much, and a little difficult to. I mean, I did get a little off of it, but not too much, considering the prices you're laying, you know, before the series with the Los Angeles Lakers.
All right. Before I let you go, any look ahead to maybe week three? Any lines? Have you looked at anything yet? Any games that you like circled on the board, or, you know, anything in particular you want to give the audience?
Not necessarily. You know, I'm really interested in the number moved in that direction. So I'll see if it comes back below that 7. But, you know, I'm kind of what we were talking about, right, with my stubbornness with Denver at the beginning of the series. So far, I'm 0-2 in betting on the Cleveland Browns, but I'm seeing a little bit of what I was looking for before the season.
Me too, by the way.
Right, yeah. And maybe you were thinking the same thing, because, look, that offensive line's extremely good. Yeah, Baker Mayfield has barely had a finger laid on him through two games. The run blocking really came around in the second game. And when with the run blocking in the running game came a lot of that play-action offense we were kind of really hoping to see under Stefanski. And Baker Mayfield looked very comfortable doing it. He had that boneheaded pick when they were putting the foot on the throat, right, which he should not have done. But he was also escaping a free rusher and maybe took his eyes off the guy momentarily. But other than that, you know, so I bet on Cleveland through two games, and obviously it hasn't worked out. Gotten the best number in each, right? Took 8.5 with them in week one. They laid 5.5 in week two. But ultimately, like, I'm a little stubborn with what I'm seeing from them. And then this team in Washington, where last week you're averaging in the range of 3.7 yards per play, right? Right, just under 5 in week one, despite getting the win over the Philadelphia Eagles. Their offense is still not good at all. And I think they have the offensive line, Cleveland, to handle a pass rush like they see right now in Washington. And so if this, I'm hoping this number gets again below 7, but you can also include it on a teaser, right? And tease it through 7 and 3. But I do think Cleveland, I'm going to be a little stubborn on them early, because I still think that they're a better team than the market really thinks that they might be here. And we've seen little flashes of them, especially in that week 2 matchup against Cincinnati.
Hopefully I don't fall into losing a lot of money on the Browns this year, because I had the same thoughts as you did last year.
Yeah.
And I wasn't super profitable with the Browns, to say the least, when it came to betting them, because I actually also thought that the general public hadn't caught up to maybe how good they could be. So maybe this is the year it turns around, and hopefully we see some better results. Jonathan Von Tobel, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
At me, JVT is up on Twitter.
JVT in the house. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, you can find me, as always, on Twitter. I'm at IrisSilverMagic. Jonathan, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
I appreciate the time, too. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.